I would just say a couple of things, because it's the first of the year, and I just came off of, New Year's Eve, where I don't know if you guys New Year's Eve, but when you get to be 53 like I am, you tend to just have a quiet evening, sit around the fire, and discuss where you went wrong. It'd be a very short, I'll just say a couple of philosophical things that are on my mind, and they also I started thinking about this thing today, and I think, what's the important thing to come out of this? And the important thing is that I learned something. So, the initial part of this is geared toward my learning something, and then if you have some questions. Because I got where I am, basically, it's Berkeley. If Berkeley decided to stay, I would still be out there freelancing. In fact, every day when I find my first off would be able to dress to me, then to Kurt Beatty, who's in the Mint Bird. That's still all the Bird sale. And some of them I think we need to discuss. I used to talk a lot before high schools and colleges on career day, which is career day. it's something we're thinking about careers, I know, but I was part of the group that would talk about careers in theater, and when it got to me, it would be a really short talk. Because basically, I would say there are no careers in theater. There never have been and never will be any careers in theater. It's not a career, it's a passion. If you have a passion, then you'll do it. And because you can't tell it, you have to do it. If you need something practical, learn to play a musical instrument. And never turn down a party where free food is served. I'm serious about it. I still go to party. I hate going to party, but I still go because of the food. It's in there. I'm not as dry. But the philosophical thing I wanted, because it mentioned something about how I got where I am. I don't need to talk about that. I guess. Well, anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. Bearing on what I want to learn. And this is what I want to learn. It seems to me that people like yourselves that are young and just about to go out into a career is that you fall kind of into three categories. Or maybe you don't, I don't know. Three seems like the right number. I think it's growing up in the Bible. A man of his ministers told me he can preach heresy, he can preach it in three parts. Those three areas are, it seems like there's a certain group of you that have no idea what your goals are. And you don't plan to have any idea what your goals are. You kind of wish you knew what your goals were, but you don't, so you just kind of go where God takes you, I count myself in that group, by the way, so when we get to my part of the team, just join it. But that's sort of the way I'm operating. I'm not saying it's the best way, but I think there's a certain part of you, it's like trying on shoes, You don't know what size you wear or what kind of shoes you like, but you'll know if it fits. I mean, if you're trying a shoe, you'll know, okay, that feels good. It's back to my basic philosophy, which is not based on the ideas of like Heidegger and Buber and Barth and Hegel and Schlegel, which is the thing I've always been. It's not that my philosophy is kind of based on Joseph Campbell and Joni Mitchell. Which is basically finding that inner voice and following it, but finding your voice is the tough part. They don't tell you how hard that is. Joseph Campbell tells you, go where your heart tells you to go, follow your bliss, but it doesn't tell you how to define it and to accept or recognize it comes along. Joni Mitchell, of course, says, I would love to be with you, but I must be who I am. That is really inspiring when I used to go to bed at night listening to the Blue Album. What I would recommend for your theater majors. Because you'll be depressed a lot. The best thing to be depressed is to follow the Joni Mitchell Blue Album, let it all out, get through with it, and then you're fine. You can't do yourself a little bit. And Joni Mitchell said, I have to be who I am. I'm sorry I can't be with John Michael from the mountains. I don't know. But then she never says, how do you know who you are? How do you define that with everything that's coming in on you? How do you hear the voice? So I think there's that first small group, there's that one small group of all of you that really have no idea what you want to do except some vague idea that you want to do it in theater, that you have this need to do it. And then there's another small group that I think is even smaller of you that are really focused on what you want to do. And you're going to stay focused on it, you know, and you know exactly where you want to go. You know what your goals are. I want to be this. I want to achieve this. And this is what it takes to get there. And I'm going to do it. And this group really studied like to be married to a woman like that. Through that kind of Teutonic Aryan discipline. It was Greek-Siner, so to speak. But she knew, I mean, everywhere, if we went to a town to perform, I was just hanging around watching TV, and she was hitting every theater with great acting glossy and setting up auditions and doing all of that. And now she's in LA, she knows exactly what she wants. So there's somebody in here, but I think the biggest group of you are those people who are going to try a bunch of things, you know. And I think there are more of you in that group than you think. I think some of you may think you're in the last group, but actually you're in this big group, which says, I'll try New York, I'll try regional theater, I want to grow, I want to do this. And I'm going to try out various things to see what my goal is. And I guess my question to you is, how do you get in that third group? You know, I mean, one of the things that, I mean, not the third group, but that little group that knows what its goals are. How do you hear the voice? How do you get rid of all of this stuff to hear the voice? This isn't a rhetorical question. I know it's not the answer to today. I mean, this is a workshop in the audience. Not necessarily just for theater people. But as we were discussing New Year's Eve, I think the thing that we came to in terms of where did we go wrong during our life was, would it have been different? I mean, I'm one of those people curving around back to how I got where I am. I'm one of those people that until I was like 35 was still ordering my catalog from the chiropractic college, thinking maybe I should do this. Even though in my heart I knew I didn't, that all I wanted to do was what I do. And I'm someone who's 53 years old and has never had to have a real job, if you know what I mean. But still, it could collapse tomorrow, you know, so I was always thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. I should be, have something to fall back on, you know, have something to fall back on. Although philosophically, I believe that if you have something to fall back on, you'll fall back on a lot of times. But I kept wondering how it would have been different if, say, when I was your age, I had a clear focus of what I wanted to do and really pursued it. And I know there's a small percentage of you that have this. And I'm just curious as to how you got there, how you were able at your age to hear the voice inside. Is there a voice?
No. Can you further define what makes up that third small section? I mean, if you don't fit it, who does?
No, I fit the small section of people who had no goals, didn't do anything about it.
Oh, yeah, you became the head of a region.
Yeah,
theater.
Is this a great country? Well, see, that's part of that, though. And I don't know how it would have been any different, because I can't think of anything I'd rather do than what I'm doing. But I think I was extremely lucky, because every good thing that's happened to me has come out of nowhere. I didn't apply for this job. All I knew is I just didn't want to work in an office. Well, now it's an artistic director. Kurt Beatty called me one day and he said, are you busy? I said, I'm just doing those artistic director things. He said, I'm trying to stay awake at your desk. I said, yeah, I was pretty much in it. But my background comes from going to high school, getting interested in theater. And I'm one of those people that realized at an early age, generally, that this was what, you know, the voice spoke to me and said, this is what you want to do. And it happened. I'm not going to go into my family background. It's very peculiar and very, there's a mini series in this. most of you, you know, there's a mini series of most of your families don't realize, but I come from a family basically of criminals. I mean, people in prison and stuff. And I looked at some movie, they call that Close Range, with Sean Penn and Kristen Glover, and that was sort of my family. It was kind of thing like, you go into this kind of business, this is what you do, you steal cars, you do this. And then one day when I was six, in my early memories, there were people coming to my door, taking away the person, the family in prison, or listening to my aunt tell stories about being on the cell block with celebrities, you know. And I took Barbara Graham away. It wasn't like she could do it in the movie. She was screaming. That's another story. But one day when I was like 15 or 16, I went to a thing in Atlanta called the Theater Under the Stars. It was in an amphitheater in a park in Atlanta. And they did professional theater during the summer. They did musicals. And one week I saw Danny Antique, and the next week I saw Pajama Gang. And my life has never been the same since. And I said, this is it. This is the greatest thing in the world, and I've done it ever since. But I've never pursued it. I've always just thought, had this feeling of like, well, if I just do what I think in the moment I want to do, it will be rewarded. And it has so far, but I don't know if you can count on it. I mean, it's not entirely true. I mean, I did start a theater in Atlanta. It's not, it didn't take any initiative at all. I mean, it's not that I just sat at home in the dark waiting for the phone to ring. So I'll just watch Beavis and Butthead until a big call. But one thing I guess I found in that configuration, in that group of people, is I basically never turned down any opportunities. You know, I wasn't selective, whereas I think a person with a real focus is selective. I mean, they're, you know, you always read about people who've got like an offer to be in a film for $100,000, and even though they weren't working, they said, no, that's not right for what I want to do. I really admire those people. I took the $100,000, I looked at them like a shot, because I think it's a rare experience you can't learn anything from. Or maybe that's just a rationalization. The director once told me I had a near genius gift for rationalization. So I can make it fit, you know. And I said, yeah, I think that production of that terrible play with that terrible cast and director was good, because I actually learned something. It wasn't just in the money. But in a way, it's two dozen times. I can count on the fingers of really one, well, finger, I think, of experiences that I learned nothing from. And that was, I took a role in a dinner theater production of Arsenic and Old Lace. My rationalization was that the part of that for me was the Frankenstein monster character, the Boris Karloff character. It would have been so much fun, and the food was free. And the food was fabulous, and maybe that was enough. But from the production itself, it was a miserable, miserable experience. But I don't know how to go through. I don't even know if the people who are focused can guarantee themselves not having miserable experiences. But anyway, I went to college, and I never took a theater course in college. And I'm probably the most ill-read theater artistic director you will ever meet. You know, when people bring up certain plays after it, I just never read it. Because once I hit the ground running, I bypass a lot of that. And either I go back and read all of the Plautus, or Chekhov, even Chekhov, I haven't read a lot of Chekhov. It's not done completely aware. I'm trying to think of there are authors that in your reading you would mention that I would say, that sounds great, I just missed it. But I went to college, majored in pre-law, and then switched to several things. Then dropped out of college because it was the most boring experience of my entire life. And went out into the real world and actually left theater for a while and started training horses. And then on the bookstore. Then went back to college at 26, loved every minute of it, finished at age 29. So I took one theater course, a senior design, in which for my project I designed The Hostage, probably the least of creative choice I could have made. It's just, you know, a big room. And I'm like, it was 90 odd couple. Here's where the card table is. And then at the age of 35, I was making a lot of money living in a small town in Kentucky and had a big 85-acre horse farm, a big old house built in three. And then one day I just said, I can't do this another day. Theater is, you know, the voice had been screaming for years. And I walked out and never went back, and was lucky enough to go down to Atlanta, walk into a theater, and be hired that day, and it's been pretty much that ever since, as an actor. So this was a theater where you didn't get training, but you got an incredible amount of experience and opportunity. You said, man, I feel like I'm a director. I love to direct the play. So, okay, here's your chance. Do it. Man, I'd love to write something. Here's a small grant. We'll give you some money. Take some time off. Write something. A theater where in the same season I could play Lenny and Of Mice and Men and James Tyrone and Long Day's Journey and Tonight and Pato and Waiting for Godot. I mean, a chance where you've got a place where you've got a chance to prove yourself or to test your wings or to put your money where your mouth is. And I would like the space to do that, and more on that in a second. And so I stayed around Atlanta for the next 16 years, pretty much acting at every theater, directing most of the theaters. I started a fringe company, what would here be called, called the Southern Theater Conspiracy. And out of that, we began to write plays. And we wrote a play called Tent Meeting, and Illuminati got us a lot of attention and took us out into the world beyond Atlanta. And that was when I held it. And then I realized how little theater there was in Atlanta. I realized how little theater there was everywhere except Seattle, Chicago, and New York, places like that. And then I was asked out of the blue, I didn't apply for this job either. Somebody approached me and asked me about becoming the artistic director of a mid-range theater in Atlanta, theater kind of like the empty space, called the Theatrical Outfit. And I did it for 2 years. It was not a good experience. It was the flip side of the kind of experience that I'm having at the empty space, sort of, because I had, sales about the board, but whenever you get artistic directors together, they tend to first start talking about their boards. But in terms of survival and fundraising and banging your head because you're in Atlanta, trying to do more work, I said, I'll never do this again. I'll never be an artistic director again. But then a friend of mine, John Klein, who's a playwright, came back to visit me, and he said, I've been to Seattle, and then you've got to try Seattle. So at that point, a grant came up, and this is where the initiative part comes in. A grant here at TCG, the Theater Communication Group, came called Artistic Observership, and I applied for the grant. I applied to go to Seattle to do it. Just to see theater, talk to theater people, and find out why this is a theater town in Atlanta is a baseball town. Now it's a baseball town. When I left, they were in my ass club. In fact, we used to say, Atlanta's the greatest place in the country to live. We have everything here. If you don't like the mountains, we have the seashore. If you don't like the city, we have the rural areas. If you don't like baseball, we have the Braves. now it's changed. And I came out here for 2 weeks, and I was just, I don't know how many of you have been around outside Seattle, but I promise you that if your main theater experience is in Seattle, you're in for a very reputable takeaway. Because I've never been to any city in the country that had this much theater and this much audience supporting. I went to 7 plays the 2 weeks I was here, and what astounded me, not so much the quality of the work, but I saw some wonderful work, and I saw some pretty bad work. But I saw people supporting the work. I mean, when I went to Enema and saw a full house of people there to see Shaw, I thought, this has got to be Shangri-La, because even though we probably won't be doing Shaw at the States, not George anyway. I can't do another Shaw tonight. The Artie Shaw. Well, Artie Shaw, there's one. I'm just here to get ideas. But to see that many people who were dying to see Shaw just really knocked me out. And so I decided to just quit my job, my artistic directorship, and with my wife and I, which is my wife now, we packed up the car, we hired movers and brought the stuff out. We had no jobs, no prospects. We just decided that at age 50, I was just going to drop everything and just come to Seattle. And we did. And that's where listening to the voice comes in, because you know, everyone kept saying, you're nuts. You're making a good living. I mean, I was making, with my job, and I was making a terrific living, putting money in the bank. And people said, why would you give up a living in the theater to go to a place where you have no job and no guarantee that you'll make it? And all I could say was, I don't know, it just feels right. Just, what am I going to do in Atlanta? I've been here 6 years. What else can I do here? I've got a, there's a wonderful book called The Horse's Mouth by Joyce Carey. The book, the movie's also terrific. If you ever get a chance to see it, Alec Guinness is in it. He also wrote the screenplay. And it's one of the best movies about what an artist is that I've ever seen. He's a guy who every time he sees a wall, like this wall, he has to paint a mural on it. And he's obsessed. And at the end, he's sailing away, and his family, his wife, and his friends are all standing on the dock, and he's just going off on this decrepit boat. They said, where are you going? And he said, I just need a new horizon. And then sometimes when you do, and you need, and you don't even know, like Daniel Love, you just know. And so I got here and began to freelance act, because it's hard to freelance direct, for those of you who are going to direct it. It's not possible, it just, it's harder to get started because you don't have auditions for it, you know. I talked to a friend of mine, Leo Shapiro, who's the director of New York, and he went to NYU, and I said, I guess you made a lot of connections in NYU, so pretty good. I said, I guess when it comes to a directing career, a lot depends on who you know, you know. In a directing career, everything depends on who you know, because, you know, they don't hold auditions for directors for plays. So anyway, I was primarily acting. I got the first week I got here, I got a small role with Rep. And then, thanks to Kurt. And then did a couple of roles over at Act, and then went out of town back to Louisville because I had some connections in those places. But the life of a freelance actor is totally unappealing, and I don't think a freelance actor can make it in Seattle. With very few exceptions, the odds are terrifically against it because you don't have enough film and television here. All you got is theater. All you got is theater. You got all you got is theater. But you can work in theater 50 weeks a year and still not make a living. It's freelance acting. If all you're doing is acting, you've got to have that other stuff. So. Back in December, I was exploring the idea of having to leave Seattle, because although I love the city, and I had already started the theater, because that's what I do, you know, I honestly think that if you're an artist, you know, this is going to sound judgmental, but hey, I'm getting old now to do that. That there's a certain amount of you that will wait tables and complain about there being no work. And then that's what you do. Then you're a waiter or a waitress. But the others of you, even if you have to wait tables, will still keep doing the work. You will find a room to do a play. You'll do it from door to door, like Rachel Lindsay and his poems, which may be an example, because he killed himself drinking Lysol. But! Rachel Lindsay used to knock on doors and go to door to reading his poetry. And I really admire that. You know, just, you know, excuse me, madam. That wet bucks in the wine barrel room. Thank you, sir. I like to say maybe some of the best example. But all I'm saying is Van Gogh didn't call up his agent every morning, you know, and say, can I paint today? You know, it's that those of you who will as you want. But it's just, it's you know, if someone were only acting, and I say, I can't imagine a career of being a freelance actor only. it just sounds like a horrible thing to do, but some of you, I don't mean to be judgmental about it, but some of you will do that. It's just that, you ever seen a chorus line? And then I would get off with philosophy. The reason I detest that play is not because of the music and the dance, which is charming and everything. It starts out by glamorizing everything I detest about theater and show, which is the insecurity and the idea of letting someone else control your life. The first song in that is called "God, I Need This Job," you know, and it's based on that. Isn't this romantic? This is the life of a gypsy. I don't see anything romantic about it. I think it's really pathetic, and I hope that that's not what you're going to do. But if you do, then not to be judgmental, but you're one of those pathetic people. When those of you who are pathetic know who you are. And if you don't, then you're really pathetic. All I'm saying is you can't go through life waiting for the phone call to tell you if you can free your heart. I mean, what kind of life is that? Or to make a living? I mean, what kind of, you know? I mean, on New Year's Eve, I looked back and see where I went wrong, but I didn't go wrong there. So maybe I didn't do too. Maybe I was more focused than I thought. Maybe there's that other group that thinks they're not focused, but really are. And then there's a group that thinks they are focused, but aren't. Well, so as I was thinking about what to do to stay in Seattle, out of the blue, Kurt Beatty says, "I'm leaving. I would like you to take my place as artistic director." Kurt, you've never seen me direct a play. He said, "Yeah, but I just have a feeling that you're on the same wavelength as you are in these space person." And I think he's right. I think I have to drop 3,000 miles away. But I think the work I'm interested in want to do is in these space work. And I can't imagine a theater here in the city that I would rather be the head of than in these space. And so far, the first year has been incredibly good. Of course, I missed the big crisis. Helps a lot where they almost closed last year. So, just to say a word about the empty space, and then I'll stop talking. Just say one word about the empty space is that what I want the empty space to be, I don't want to use the word salon, it's kind of old-fashioned. I would like it to be a place where things are happening all the time and where people who are initiative-driven can give an opportunity. For instance, we have several literary directing interns this year. We don't have any acting interns because this year, I didn't think I could give them enough back, like opportunities, and it's not structured for workshops and everything. Neither is the directing intern. But what I told the directing interns was, look, if you have an initiative, and you want to work, I'll see if I can make that happen for you. I'll see if I can give you what you need, but it's up to you to come up with a project. It's up to you to come up with the idea. So one of our interns is the head of the literary department and actually runs the whole thing like being a literary manager. Another intern runs our late night program. Like I gave her her own theater basically. We started a new late night theater and you're it. You're the producer of the late night theater. You're now the artistic director of the late night theater. And it's worked out very well. I have to find the people that I'm interested in working with. I have to have some kind of special audition. I went, for instance, to the PAPP. Is that right? Showcase last year. And I'm not saying that people are in the showcase aren't the kind of actors I'm looking for. I'm saying that in the showcase I didn't see it. Because basically what I saw and what you generally see in a commercially oriented program, I'm not saying yours is commercially oriented, but I think the showcase sort of was, is you see basically very safe things. I mean, you don't see people taking a lot of chances, and for very good reason, you know, because it's commercially oriented. And if you see a scene like, from say, Romeo and Juliet, it's the almost obvious choice. And you see a lot of technique, you know, you see a lot of great voices and great everything. You don't have great, like on this one, you're going to great technique. Here's great technique. What I didn't see was the people astounding and going, my God, what was that? And that's what I'm looking for. And I'm not knocking it because it's not in the okay. That's a different thing. I have to find those people, the people who can do both things. People who are willing to pretty much do anything to tell the story. People that if you say, okay, in this scene, if the whole cast rides across the stage on goats, naked, you don't have someone saying, wait, you can't do that. Or what will I look like? You know, that kind of thing. But people who say, shouldn't have been sidestep. or these angoras or what? Because they tickle a lot. But if you're willing to say, if that's what makes the story, I'll try that. And those people are kind of hard to find because training, a lot of training is puts it up here, you know. So a lot of their work and a lot of what they do is up here. And I'm looking for people that I can get out of, because I can lobotomize this for a little while, you know, who stop thinking about it and just do it. And I know you do that, and you do that in flashes, and you do that in certain approaches to theater. But I found that a lot of people, once they get out of the real world, have lost it altogether, and they're totally up here. They're totally, you know, not all of them, but a few of them. I said this after 6 days of general rehearsals. I mean, auditions. 6 days of general auditions back in the spring. And I'm telling you, I think all of you should be required to sit for 6 days of general auditions before you get your acting license. That's one of the things you have to do. You have to sit through and see why directors, when you come into yours on the fourth day, have their eyes glazed over and have their expectations lowered. You know, because most of what you see is this. 6 days of people sitting in a chair going, yeah, you know, I saw my wife this week. She looked good. You know, I don't know why we split. You know, for like 10 minutes, it's like, but everyone told me, you know, the simple is the best. Be simple. Don't make a scene. And you long for someone to feel some emotion, you know, just some emotion. There's a school in the United States called North Carolina School of the Arts. I don't know if you have any connection with it or anything. But for some reason, the best audition I've seen come from that school. And I don't know who's teaching them or what they're teaching them or the approach they're taking. But these are people with raw emotion. And doing things you haven't seen, and it's like, man, this is what I got into theater for. I mean, real emotion and real chances, real emotional risks, instead of that technique saying, yeah, this is a nice monologue. From looking at it, I'd say you've probably done it, what, 1,000 times? But they're truly in the moment, and they're truly open to emotion, and you just don't see it much. In 6 days, I saw it maybe once a day. And you long to see it eventually. So what we're trying to do with the empty space